How to preserve liberty in an era when politics are polarized, democracy seems to be on the wane, and the facts are treated as a matter of opinion. In the build-up to World War II and in the years after, two men showed the way, according to our next guest. With an unwavering commitment to human freedom and a fierce opposition to totalitarian threats from both the left and the right, Winston Churchill and George Orwell gave common cause in a perilous time, despite their vast differences. Winner of the Pulitzer Prize, best-selling author of Fiasco, and renowned national security expert Thomas Ricks examines these two men in his best-selling dual biography, Churchill and Orwell, The Fight for Freedom. And the book is now just out in paperback. It's a great pleasure to welcome Thomas Ricks to the roundtable this morning. Thomas, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
What brought you to this dual biography of Churchill and Orwell?
Well, as I looked around our own time, when democracy seems kind of shaky, when the political system is turbulent, facts seem to be becoming lost, opinion is confused with fact, I was thinking back to another time like that, the 1930s, when it was even worse, when democracy looked like it was collapsing, they were in a Great Depression, fascism and communism seemed ascendant. All sorts of autocracy seemed to be the new way to run governments. And there were two people then, one on the right, one on the left, who spoke up and objected. And on the right, it was Winston Churchill. On the left, it was George Orwell. And interestingly, neither was particularly welcome within their own group for pointing this out. For his efforts, Churchill was exiled from his own conservative party, and Orwell, a leftist, but not a communist, was denounced by a lot of pro-Stalinist types for being critical of Russia. So that intrigued me, and I thought, you know, there's a story to be told here that might have some application to our own time.
You make the point they never met, but they knew of each other, and they did admire each other's work.
Yeah, it surprised me they never met. You know, England's not that big a place, and English elites are not that big, and they were in the same city, London, for decades. Yet they never ran into each other. But you see them looking across this ideological chasm between the two and connecting. So the hero of 1984 is named Winston. There's only one Winston in the England of the 1940s. And the last thing that Orwell ever writes on his deathbed is an admiring review of Churchill's wartime memoirs. Churchill, for his part, read 1984, loved it, read it again, recommended it to his doctor. So they come together in odd ways, but they never met. I'm not sure they actually would have had much to say to each other had they met. They were such different people. Churchill is a bon vivant, a heavy drinker. He lives in luxury all his life. He wears tailored pink silk underwear. One morning he walks into the British Embassy in Cairo in World War II. He's staying there, and he says to the ambassador's wife he wants a carafe of white wine with his breakfast. And she raises her eyebrows, and he said, "Don't worry, madam, I've already had two whiskey sodas." Whereas Orwell is ascetic, self-denying, tall, skinny, chain-smoking, tubercular introvert. One night in World War II, he comes home to his flat, and his wife has left out food for the cat and his dinner. He absentmindedly eats the cat's food. This is just not a guy who's paying a lot of attention to the luxuries of life. Yet, for all their differences, they come together on one fundamental thing, which is what is the key question of the 20th century? And they say, no, it's not Marx, it's not Freud, it is what is the relationship of the state to the individual, and how do you preserve individual freedom in an era of growing state power and corporate intrusiveness?
On that point, you write in the book, to refuse to run with the herd is generally harder than it looks. Churchill and Orwell showed us the way. How so?
How to do it, or how did they do it?
How did they show us the way?
Both of them had principles, enunciated them, understood them. Both of them were determined to get to the facts of the matter, to see what was in front of their eyes, and then to apply their principles to those facts. They also understood that when you do that, you won't necessarily make any friends. They were willing to take unpopular positions even within their own groups. So Churchill spends most of the 1930s exiled by his own conservative party because he opposes the policy of appeasing the Nazis. And Orwell, as I said, spends a lot of time in the 1940s being criticized by their leftist because he's critical of Stalin.
You also, in writing about Orwell, I mean, he was lesser known during his lifetime, but he really did have his finger on what was happening. What do you think led to that discovery and his understanding of what was happening?
I think with both Churchill and Orwell, the point of departure for them is a love of words. And they could see that when politicians are lying or manipulating people, they begin to distort language. They were both hypersensitive to that, both because they just love language as a living thing. And I think that was really what they began with. The second was observation. See what's in front of your own eyes and be willing to trust your own perceptions. And at a time when a lot of people thought, no, lying is the way to go if it helps our political cause, they said, no, once you lie, you begin losing the battle itself. The battle is about freedom, about liberty, and about the ability to think for oneself, to speak for oneself, and to gather peaceably with like-minded people. And so I think when they saw those principles being violated, they reacted. When they saw language being distorted, it set off alarms in their head. And I think that's why they were able to chart an independent course when so many millions of people were dead wrong.
What are the challenges in writing a dual biography like this?
It's a good question. First of all, you have to realize you're not going to write a real biography of both people because that would be a couple of thousand pages. Also, it's been done by a lot of people. So part of it was to point out key phases in their lives that were of interest and somehow illuminated each other. And that really made it, it's not really a dual biography as much as it is a dual history of the two of them in the 1930s and 40s, which was interesting because that's also the fulcrum point of the 20th century. I would say May 1940 is the fulcrum point of the whole century, and that's one reason that Churchill is so interesting when he becomes prime minister. By his efforts alone, almost, England does not enter into a peace treaty with the Germans, instead fights them, and manages to stay independent until the United States enters the war.
This whole idea of having this moral conviction that these two men share, as you write, and also that courage to stay true to it, certainly, as you pointed out at the very beginning of our discussion, seems to be something that is quite rare now.
It is. One thing I really look for as I look around our own time is people who are willing to be critical of their own sides. It's costly, it's not popular, but it does point out somebody who is worth listening to. So for one example I would give in American politics is John McCain, who has stood up for things he believes in, like speaking out against torture, even when his own party doesn't want to hear it. So that's one of the things I really look for.
And this idea of staying true to that and the courage that it takes of finding people with that strong moral conviction and also courage. I mean, we thirst for that now, don't we?
We really do. And I don't understand why we're not seeing more people respond to it. Why members of Congress just don't stand up and say, look, no more. This is not acceptable. But fortunately, as Americans, we have something a lot of countries don't have. We have a written constitution with a Bill of Rights that lays out what it means to be an American. If somebody violates your First Amendment rights, they're not just violating the law, they're acting in an un-American way. Somebody who stops people from protesting against President Trump is acting in an un-American way. Likewise, somebody who stops somebody from speaking on a college campus is being un-American. And again, you can just say, let's look at the Bill of Rights. Let's look at the Constitution. These are the things that tell us how to be an American. And right now I see a lot of people in American life, not just Donald Trump, who seem to not like the founding document of this country, who seem either ignorant of the Constitution or actually dislike it. And the more they do, the more I think we should stand by the Constitution and pay attention to it and make sure it's followed.
Well, it sounds like your ride has arrived.
I'm sorry. That was just an ambulance.
No, I understand. The name of the new book is Churchill and Orwell, The Fight for Freedom. It is now out in paperback from Penguin Press. Thomas Ricks, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Churchill and Orwell, The Fight for Freedom, and is published by Penguin Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.